This is Don Hollenbeck for CBS at Confederate Army Headquarters near Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia. On this Palm Sunday morning of April 9th, 1865, the moment which 8 million men, women, and children of the Confederacy have been expecting and dreading has come. General Robert E. Lee, Supreme Commander of the Southern Forces, has left his headquarters here for a meeting with the command of the Northern Armies, General Ulysses S. Grant. That meeting was arranged at Lee's request, and it can mean only one thing. The gray-haired chieftain of the South is prepared to ask Grant what terms he is willing to offer for the surrender of the Army of Northern Virginia. General Lee is reported to be accompanied by Colonels Taylor and Marshall of his personal staff, and by Sergeant Tucker, Chief Courier of the old 3rd Army Corps.
April 9, 1865, Appomattox. Lee rides to meet Grant. You are there.
An anguished South looks into the face of defeat. CBS takes you back to the final moments of an unforgettable day in the making of the United States of America. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You are there is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now,
Lee's headquarters near Appomattox Courthouse and Don Hollenbeck.
Come as a complete surprise. Ever since Grant forced Lee out of his defenses at Petersburg and Richmond last week, the Southern position has become progressively worse. Lee has been retreating across Virginia with 10,000 effective, 15,000 stragglers. All that is left of the once powerful Army of Northern Virginia, 70,000 strong. Grant's Northern forces number nearly 100,000, including almost three armies, the Army of the Potomac, the Army of the James, and General Sheridan's cavalry. Those Northern armies have overtaken Lee and are now astride his front lines as well as behind him in the red hills of Appomattox. Lee made a last desperate attempt this morning to break through on the Lynchburg Pike. He hoped to reach the mountains of southwest Virginia, but the attempt failed. General John B. Gordon, who led the attempted breakthrough, reported to Lee, and I quote him, "I have fought my corps to a frazzle. I can do nothing unless heavily supported." It is believed that General Gordon's failure decided Lee to go and see Grant and ask for surrender. What terms will Grant offer? Will they be acceptable to Lee, to his men? Here is Quincy Howe with an analysis of those questions.
What terms will Grant offer? The best opinion is that those terms will be as they always have been, unconditional surrender. Will they be acceptable to Lee? Probably not. To his men, certainly not. They'd rather fight it out to the death. U.S. Grant, unconditional surrender Grant. That's what his men call him. Ever since General Grant has commanded a federal army, his terms have always remained inexorable. Unconditional surrender. He made this clear at Fort Donelson. He made it clear again at Vicksburg, where the tragic condition of the Confederate Army, garrison, and civilians did not move him to mercy. His terms have never changed. It was unconditional surrender every time. When Grant took command of all the Northern armies more than a year ago, he publicly announced that he would fight it out against Lee at Richmond if it took all summer. It not only took all summer, it took all autumn and all winter. It also took over 100,000 federal casualties inflicted by the surviving 30,000 men of the Army of Northern Virginia. These casualties earned for Grant the name of Butcher from his own men. If Grant showed no mercy to his own men, why should he show mercy to the enemy, especially now that he has Lee's army trapped by two federal armies, by Sheridan's cavalry, and by the James River on his flank? 100,000 men against 10,000. Odds of 10 to 1. On the other hand, Lee cannot accept unconditional surrender. The record of his Army of Northern Virginia is the most brilliant in the military history of this country. 4 bloody years, its bayonets have carried the Confederate cause. Lee has defeated Grant every time against almost the same odds. He would prefer to fight it out rather than accept what he considers dishonorable terms. As for his men, Ken Roberts with General Longstreet's corps in the rear of the Confederate Army reports that a truce has been arranged. So, over to Ken Roberts.
The truce between the armies of the North and South was personally arranged by General Lee and General Humphrey, representing General Meade, commander of the Federal Army of the Potomac. As far as we can learn, no definite time has been set, but all firing has ceased, both in the front lines and here at the rear. News of the truce was brought by special courier from Lee a few moments ago and announced by General James Longstreet in command of the First Corps. General Longstreet's men are busily throwing up fresh breastworks and digging trenches. General Longstreet is with me now, a veteran of many battles beginning at First Manassas. He was wounded recently in the fighting before Richmond. His right arm is in a black sling. General Longstreet, sir, where is General Lee now?
I would not deign to know.
Well, sir, doesn't the fact that you just received word from General Lee of a truce mean that he is meeting with General Grant?
I have no official confirmation to that effect.
Sir, do you agree with General Lee's decision to ask for terms from General Grant?
General Lee is my immediate superior, the commander-in-chief of the Confederate States Armies of America. It is not for me to agree or to disagree with his decision, but to carry out his orders.
Would you carry them out if the terms are unconditional surrender?
I will obey any orders from General Lee.
General Longstreet, do you think General Lee will accept unconditional surrender terms?
I shall abide by whatever decision he may make.
However, you expect the decision to be a fighting one, sir. Your men seem to be more concerned with preparing for battle than for peace.
There is no peace yet. There is only a truce.
Well, if the truce should break off, sir... excuse me, General Longstreet. A federal cavalry officer is riding in under a white flag of truce. He's coming in not from the rear of this army where Lee and Grant are supposed to be conferring, but from up toward the front where Federal General Sheridan's cavalry is blocking the Confederates. He's flanked by two Confederate officers. One is Major Hunter, and the other is Captain Sims, I think. Yes, it is Captain Sims. The Federal officer is wearing a wide sombrero, turned up, rugged face, and curls. Yellow curls hanging loosely over his shoulders, and a gold-trimmed blue sack uniform with a bright red scarf. The Federal officer is pulled up now. He can just raise his horseback on his haunches with a flourish. Now he's swung himself to the ground. He's wearing the largest shoulder straps the Major General I've ever seen. Huge Mexican spurs, a tremendous saber, pistols in both boots. He's striding over here towards General Longstreet. He's a young man, can't be more than 25. General Longstreet is waiting for him, a scowl on his heavily bearded face. The Federal officer is saluting.
In the name of General Sheridan, I demand the unconditional surrender of this army.
And who are you, sir?
I am General Custer.
Oh, the hangman of Front Royal. By what authority do you come into our line, General Custer?
There is authority enough behind me. General Sheridan is in a position to destroy you if you do not surrender at once.
Sir, you are rash, ignorant, and discourteous. Not only to me, your superior in rank, but your own commander.
I only wish to prevent the splitting of our force.
I am not the commanding general, my young friend. But if I were, I would receive no communication from you, nor from General Sheridan, nor from any other. From any other underling.
Sir, I didn't mean, sir. Well, that is... Well,
that's good. Since you are now going more moderate in your tone, I will say to you that General Lee is in communication with General Grant.
Yes, sir.
Now go and act as you and General Sheridan choose. And I will teach you a lesson you won't forget.
Yes, sir.
Now go!
Yes, sir.
Well, gentlemen, that did me a world of good.
The Federal cavalry officer and his Confederate escort are mounting up. There they go, back toward the front lines where they came from. The tension here has relaxed. The Confederate officers are still chuckling over the tongue-lashing that General Longstreet just administered to the brash and cocky young Federal officer. Oh, here comes a Confederate courier riding in from the rear of this army. Perhaps he's bringing a message. Yes, it's General Lee's courier. In a moment, we'll have news on the meeting between the two commanding generals. The courier is coming up to General Longstreet
General
now.
Request that you join him in the front ranks of the army.
General, Watson, come with me.
Let's go. An order from General Lee that General Longstreet join him up front. The general and his staff are mounting up. I don't know what this means. There's still no word on Lee's meeting with General Grant.
This is Don Hollenbeck at General Lee's headquarters near Appomattox. We've interrupted Ken Roberts. General Lee has failed to meet General Grant. The federal commander did not appear. General Lee has left the rear of his army, and he's now on his way with his staff toward his own front lines on the outskirts of Appomattox. Quincy Howe's here in the studio with me. What do you make of it, Quincy?
Perhaps Grant didn't get Lee's communication last night asking for the meeting. Or if he did get the message, maybe he just couldn't reach the appointed place in time. Another possibility is that he received the request and turned it down because he preferred to attack rather than talk. However, the fact that the truce is still in effect makes this last possibility kind of unlikely. General Lee is probably riding up to his front lines now to continue his efforts to locate General Grant. That's the best I can make of it, but you've got something new there, haven't you, Don?
I do, Quincy. It looks important. The village of Appomattox Courthouse up beyond the front lines of the Confederate Army has just been declared neutral ground. Picket lines of the opposing armies have been posted on opposite sides of the town, and that suggests that Lee and Grant are now going to meet at Appomattox Courthouse. John Daly up at the Confederate front reports that General Lee has arrived with his staff. Go ahead, John Daly.
General Lee is waiting here for the arrival of a federal courier who will bring Grant's answer to Lee's request for a meeting. If General Grant agrees, the meeting in all probability will be held somewhere in the village of Appomattox Courthouse. The village was declared neutral territory by Generals Gordon and Sheridan. Right now, General Lee is conferring with his lieutenant under an apple tree at the edge of an orchard about 50 yards in front of me here. The general is resting on a crude cot made out of fence rails covered with army blankets, their red color faded from long use. The southern commander is wearing a brand new full-dress uniform. It's hard to tell from here what expression is on his gray-bearded face, but the general looks very solemn as he talks quietly with his aides. There's General Mahone, General Alexander, Colonel Marshall, Colonel Venable, Taylor, Talcott, and, by the way, a cordon of engineers has been thrown around the apple tree to keep back the tattered, barefoot Confederate veterans who, as usual, are pressing around, anxious for a close look at their beloved commander, and this time also for word on the surrender possibilities. They've heard rumors that General Lee is about to meet with Grant. I've talked with some of these Confederate soldiers, and they refuse generally to believe it. They'd rather die than surrender, but still they're devoted to General Lee, and they'll follow him anywhere and do anything he says. In just a moment, we'll have General Henry Wise at our microphone. He is the former governor of Virginia and a close friend of General Lee's. He's standing a few feet away right now talking to one of his soldiers. General Wise is a gaunt, angular man with a much wrinkled face and thick white hair. He's wearing an old gray coat, a stovepipe hat, and gray blankets are wrapped around his legs. General Wise is smoking a pipe, and he's approaching us now. General Wise, sir, in spite of the preparations being made by both armies for a meeting of the two leaders, the two commanders, there is still some doubt as to whether Grant will actually talk terms with General Lee. Now, do you hope, sir, that there will be a meeting, or are you in favor of fighting it out?
There must be a meeting. There'll have to be a meeting. This army of Northern Virginia is hopelessly whipped. My men have already endured more than I believe that flesh and blood could stand. They've been fighting day and night for more than a week without food. And by heaven, sir, they'll not move another step until somebody gives them something to eat.
Well, are you in favor, sir, of unconditional surrender?
I'm in favor of peace.
But, General Wise, do you think that the Confederacy, your country, will accept unconditional surrender?
Country, sir? There's been no country for a year or more. General Lee, he's the country to these poor men of the Army of Northern Virginia.
I see, sir, but what would you and your men do if General Lee rejected Grant's terms and ordered you to fight it out?
Well, if General Lee demands the sacrifice, we'll fight and die for him, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me, sir, I'll be getting back to my men.
Thank you very much, sir. General Wise is making his way slowly back toward his men up on the hill behind me. He's a very tired, a very weary man, and General Longstreet is coming up the pike. Coming up from the rear of the army, two staff officers riding with him, one on either side. And now one of General Lee's lieutenants is striding away from that apple tree where the conference has been going on, and he's coming this way. It's General E.P. Alexander. He's the foremost artillerist in the Army of Northern Virginia, a young man.
General Alexander!
Yes? Sir, can you tell us when the courier from General Grant is expected to arrive?
I'm not familiar with the movements of the enemy.
You've just been talking to General Lee, sir, and I thought...
General only asked me for my opinion.
What did you tell him?
I told him that we have fought under him for 4 years, and we have a right to ask one favor.
What favor is that, sir?
We want him to let us fight it out.
But, General Alexander, suppose you did fight your way out, some of you. Where would you go?
We could join General Johnson in North Carolina. Maybe we could return to our respective states. We could rally behind our governors. Anything is better than giving up anything.
Don't you think, sir, that guerrilla warfare would be hopeless?
If we must die, sir, we'll die like Jeb Stuart in the saddle with guns in our hands, not rotting away in some northern prison. Our comrades, sir, did not die for us to break faith with them. They did not die so that the thousands at Manassas, Chancellorsville, Fredericksburg, the Wilderness, and Gettysburg for us to dishonor their blood. No, sir. A little more blood spilled won't make any difference. We have a right to die for a cause we think is just, sir. We have a right.
General Courier!
Excuse me, General Alexander. A federal officer is riding down the hill from Appomattox Village, escorted by a federal cavalryman carrying a white flag. And General Lee, at the edge of the apple orchard, has risen. General Longstreet, with him now, is saying something to him. Longstreet joined the group under the tree when he rode up just a minute or two ago. The federal officer is dismounting, and he must be the courier General Lee has been waiting for, the courier from Grant. The federal courier is a colonel, perhaps a staff aide with that rank. He's talking to General Lee now, and the soldiers about here have stopped talking. Everyone is silently watching that little group under the apple tree. We'll know in a moment whether the meeting between the two is to... Oh, General Lee is getting up on his horse. Colonel Marshall, too, the General Lee's aide and his orderly, Sergeant Tucker. General Lee and his aides are riding away now up the hill toward Appomattox Courthouse. It didn't take very long. That federal officer and the cavalryman carrying the white flag are with them, and Lee is on his way to meet General Grant. The long-awaited meeting is about to take place. This is John Daly, and I return you now to Confederate headquarters and Don Holliday.
CBS has been given permission to pass Ned Kalmer through the Confederate picket lines into the village of Appomattox Courthouse. He's on his way there now in a mobile unit. As soon as he's ready to report, we'll take you to Appomattox. Now, here's Quincy Howe.
Just imagine, if you can, the mental and spiritual tortures which General Robert E. Lee must be suffering now as he rides to meet Grant at Appomattox. Uppermost in his mind, there is probably the desperate hope that his merciless opponent in war will reverse himself and prove magnanimous in peace. Honorable terms, that is what Lee wants. Terms commensurate with the honor of his army. For only honorable terms can soothe the open wounds of the proud South. Only with honorable terms can Lee return to his men down here in the valley and say, we have lost, but we have lost with honor. We must forget the past. We must think of the future. We must think of our children. But suppose General Grant does not offer honorable terms. Then General Lee must face his men and say, the enemy is inflexible. The end has not yet come. We must fight on. Surely his heart feels compassion for the southern women and children anxiously awaiting the return of their husbands, fathers, and sons. He must be thinking, too, of the men who fought and died for the stars and bars and of their widows and orphans. Does he also fear the terrible vengeance that the radical northern politicians have threatened against his southern countrymen? And don't forget all the might-have-beens that must be passing through General Lee's mind. If Jackson had survived Chancellorsville, if Beauregard had stormed on into Washington after First Manassas, if a courier hadn't lost Lee's orders at Sharpsburg, if Wilcox had reinforced Pickett at Gettysburg, a few different turns of the wheel of fate, and Lee might have awaited Grant at the surrender table. If only... Just a minute. Ned Kalmer is ready to report from Appomattox Courthouse. Go ahead, Ned Kalmer.
Generals Robert E. Lee and Ulysses S. Grant are at this moment conferring on terms for the surrender of the Army of Northern Virginia. The conference is going on inside a two-story red brick house owned by a Mr. McLean. I'm on the front porch of that house now. The only Confederates inside are General Lee and his aide, Colonel Marshall. with General Grant are seven federal officers. The conference has been going on for some time. Outside on the porch here are about 20 more federal officers, including General Sheridan and General Custer. The son of the President of the United States, Captain Robert Lincoln, is also here. General Sheridan is with me now at our microphone. General Sheridan, sir, what do you think will be the result of the conference going on inside?
The rebel army is being given a chance to save itself from annihilation by unconditional surrender.
Then you think, sir, that General Grant is insisting on his usual terms?
Certainly. There's no question about it. General Grant is a soldier, not a political bargainer. As a soldier, his business is to destroy Lee's army or force it into unconditional surrender.
Well, do you think General Lee will accept, sir?
Frankly, no. Lee is desperate and bold enough to risk escape by fighting it out with us. In my opinion, this whole thing is a trick, a ruse invented by Lee to gain time for his army to rally for a last stand. And I hope he does. If he wants to fight it out here, we're ready.
Thank you, General Sheridan. The Federal Cavalry Commander has walked away. He's resumed his pacing up and down here on the porch of the McLean House. The minutes pass very slowly here. The tension is very great. General Lee's orderly out there in the yard has removed the bridles from the three horses in the general's party. He's letting them graze on the young grass. It's a beautiful spring day, a good day for peace. The door has opened. General Lee has come out onto the porch. Federal officers have all risen and saluted. No one speaks. General Lee stands framed in the doorway there. Tall, commanding man, gray-haired, full of gray beard and mustache, deep brown eyes. His brand-new full-dress uniform has three stars on the low collar, a double row of brass buttons, a red sash. The general wears a gold sword, black hip boots, gold spurs. They glint. Now he's putting on his gray felt hat. He's returned the salute of the federal officers, who only now have brought their arms back to their sides. General Lee is now crossing slowly to the head of the steps, which lead down into the front yard. A deep crimson flush is rising from his neck, spreading up over his face. He stands at the top of the steps, drawing on his gauntlets. His eyes are fixed intently in the direction of the valley to his right, where his army lies waiting for him less than 1 mile away. He seems strangely oblivious of his surroundings. General Lee just struck his fist into his gloved hand several times. Now he glances to the left and to the right as if looking for something.
Hold it! Hold it!
General Lee is walking down the front steps. He called to his orderly, who has bridled the horses and is now waiting with them. Now the other officers are coming out the front door. There's the Confederate Colonel Marshall. He's making his way quickly down the steps and over toward the right side of the house where General Lee is mounting his chunky gray horse. Some of the federal officers are descending the steps, but I don't see General Grant yet. He's still inside the house. Now General Lee's orderly, as well as his aide, are riding out of the front yard. Here comes General Grant. He's just come through the door. He's hurrying down the steps on his way to his horse. General Lee is passing him. Grant has stopped. He's taken off his hat. General Lee removes his hat. Not a word is spoken. And now the Confederate chieftain is riding back to his Army of Northern Virginia. And General Grant, dressed in the plain blue uniform of a Federal Army private, has mounted his horse and with his staff is riding up to General Sheridan, who's standing close by here in the yard.
Where do you make your headquarters tonight?
Here or there. Right in this yard, probably.
Very well, then. I'll know where to find you in case I wish to communicate. Good day.
Good day, General.
General Grant is riding away. General Sheridan, sir, what has happened? Has Lee surrendered?
Colonel Babcock, General Grant's aide is preparing a statement now. We'll give it to all correspondents shortly.
General, can't you just tell
me? You'll have to wait for the official statement.
Thank you, General. As you heard, we'll have that federal statement in just a few moments. John Daly, however, is with the Confederate forces, and General Lee should be arriving there now, down in the valley. Perhaps we can get the information quicker there. So go ahead, John Daly.
General Lee and his aides following behind him are just coming down the Lynchburg Pike from Appomattox. The Confederate soldiers are lining the road here by the apple orchard waiting for him. And a soldier has just cried out, "General, are we surrendered?" General Lee doesn't answer. He's riding straight on through the lines of his men on both sides of the road. Another soldier has shouted the question that's on the minds of all these men. And the cry is now being taken up. They've all taken up the cry. They've come out onto the road and have stopped the general force
Again and again, they repeat that heartbreaking cry, "Are we surrendered, General? Tell us, are we surrendered?" General Lee has taken off his hat now, and he's started to speak. Let's listen.
Men, we have fought through the war together. I've done the best I could for you. Go, big fellows, and go to your homes until it's day.
Then we have surrendered.
Yes, you are surrendered. But you are surrendered with us.
The Army of Northern Virginia has surrendered, and here's a message that has just come in. General Grant is sending over 25,000 federal rations to feed the starving Confederate Army, and the men are to be allowed to keep their horses. But in spite of the unexpected generosity of the federal commander, the Confederate soldiers here are shocked to grief. All they can think of is that, regardless of the honorable terms, they have surrendered. Men are throwing away their muskets. Grown men are crying without shame, flinging themselves to the ground, shaking with thought, like children crying with a fearful and terrible violence, rolling on the ground. Some of the men are still striding around their gray-haired general, touching his hand. Some pat his horse, saddle, smoothing his flesh. Tears are rolling down General Lee's cheeks, his eyes seeing nothing or fixed but a line between the ears and his horse. He looks neither to the right nor left. This is a grim and tragic moment. 4 years of sacrifice, training courage, hope, despair, finally ended in disaster for this army. This is a day that the proud veterans of the Army of Northern Virginia will never forget. A day that marks the futility of raw courage in the great complex of modern war and its machine. For the greatest army ever produced on this continent,
April 9, 1865, Appomattox. Grant gives Lee honorable terms, and the war between the states is over.